Awesome. All right, welcome to DEEB, everybody. I am Sherry Jones with the Southwest Washington Contractors Association. I'll turn it over to Ryan, if you want to introduce yourself.
Sure. Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
I'll go next. Mike Odrin, McKay Sposito.
Eric Lima, SGA Engineering.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Jeff Riston, Kingston Homes.
Seth Hawley, AKS Engineering.
Was that all the DEEB members, I think? Okay. I guess staff?
Megan I'm Brent Fletcher. Davis with,
sorry, Megan. Go ahead.
Megan Fletcher, Community Development.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Shannon Asha, Development Engineering.
Diana Nett, Development Engineering.
Rod Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Devin Rostford, Clark County Public Works.
Kevin Tyler, Clark County Public Works.
Naomi Patipanla, Development Engineering.
Hunter Decker, Clark County Public Works, Forester.
April, I don't think, have we heard from you yet?
No, I was making sure everyone was done first. April first, Community Development Director.
And then anyone else online?
Houston Ajo, Ajo Construction.
Max Booth, Maddox Transformer.
Justin Wood, Clark County Association of Realtors.
Did we miss anybody else?
Brittany Salter with Fish and Wildlife.
That looks like it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, everybody. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. The audio will be posted on DEEB's website. Did everyone get a chance to review the last meeting minutes, which was a few months ago?
I did, Madam Chair, and I move for approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, great. Any member announcements? Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll roll right into biannual code updates.
I have a couple of things, Mary.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. It looks like there is a community planning meeting on the 12th of this month at 5:30. It's with Oliver and Jose for DEIS. They're looking for an alternative to draft environmental impact statement. The assessor's office freeze for recording plats and things of that nature is lifting on the 17th of this month. And I am leaving the county. I've accepted a new position, so you will be having a new DEEB coordinator. I'm not 100% sure who that's going to be, but someone will be here for you guys. And I know that they are doing maintenance up in that training room, so I do believe we would like to see if we can maintain this online forum for the remainder of the year.
Oh.
Just because whoever does take this position over as the coordinator is going to have to get trained on the new equipment and whatnot. So we want to just give time for that. I do believe we would like to see DEEB stay in this format until January.
Well, thank you for your time, Megan. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And good luck with your future endeavors.
Thanks. You'll see me, I'm sure.
Okay. we'll look forward to you popping up somewhere unexpected.
You will. So that's what I had for announcements.
Perfect. Thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
Okay. So now we will move on to the manual code updates. Brent.
All right. Shannon, are you going to put the document up on the screen? There we go. Great. Thank you. All right. So this is an overview of the draft biennial code amendments for this next round. I'm working right now on scheduling a initial work session with council to go over these items and see if there's any they want to pull or adjust before we get into the formal process. So I will be coming back to Deeb with updates as this moves forward. I'm not going to spend much time on a lot of these items. There's a few things that I suspect Deeb may want to discuss in a little more detail. But just as a by way of a quick overview, the Scrivener's errors and minor changes. First item is several sections in Title 32, which is the code enforcement title, cleaning up some gender references, referencing the hearings examiner and the responsible official as a him, as well as they found that there are still references to the Board of County Commissioners, so we're correcting those. Those changes are in an attachment to the handout that was provided. The next item was a request from the finance folks in Public Works to update the time limit for expending impact fee revenue from 6 years to 10 years. The state law was changed in 2011, and the county has not previously updated our code to reflect the changes in state law. Moving on to clarifications. This is a couple items from the middle housing code updates that were adopted earlier this year. One, I think everybody here is aware of, the language regarding the number of attached units allowed in the single family districts. So this is cleaning this up so it's clear that the code allows for up to four units per attached structure. And if you want more than four, then you have to go through a PUD. The way the code was originally worded, it really stated that it was only four units total per development. So this is the cleanup to fix that. The other item relates to the ADU standards and the updates that were made there. There's a provision that allows ADUs to be placed in front of the front line of the primary structure if there's there's at least a 40-foot front yard setback. So for in cases where the existing home is quite a ways back from the street, there was language in that limiting the width of those ADUs that could be placed in front to 50% of the front facade of the existing structure. Well, we've been struggling to figure out what the front facade means and how to apply that. So we believe the intent was to ensure that any ADUs that are in front of the primary structure are visually subordinate to the primary structure. So this is a proposed change to clarify that. All right. And if you guys have questions, you can interrupt.
On lots that, here, I'll turn on my camera too. On lots that are like on a corner that have two street faces, I guess the way it was originally written, you know, most houses have a front, So in that case, they would have a front street side and a side street side. So that 50% would apply to both.
That's a good question. I think that language could potentially be cleaned up a little bit. The intent is, you know, we have a definition of front lot line in those circumstances, and this is intended to apply to that front lot line. So I think we can make that clearer. And that was one of the struggles we were having with the front facade, because the front of a lot of homes isn't necessarily facing the front lot line. They can be tilted at an angle or rotated 90 degrees or more, depending on the circumstance. So, we'll clarify that. All right. Next item. Development engineering has for quite some time been allowing fee reductions when you're, say, adding an early grading to an existing plan review. That isn't really codified in the fee table. So we're proposing to create an hourly based fee option. I believe this is going to ultimately end up being a footnote that applies to specific line items in the existing fee table. And we're working with our finance manager to come up with an appropriate rate structure for that. But the idea is that essentially the review manager would be doing what they're currently doing, which is figuring out approximately how many hours they think that additional work is going to take and adjusting the fees accordingly. This is just intended to formally allow that to be done. So there will be more detail on that as we move forward. And then another fee item, we had a recommendation from the county's finance group, which is in the auditor's office, to institute a late fee for past due invoices for the fire marshal safety inspections. So the current code states that if you're 105 days past due, that the county will add 12% interest. The intent here is that at some point earlier than 105 days, there would be a flat late fee that would be added in addition to the 12% if you go past 105 days. So that the amount of that fee is also still being determined. The next item, this is in response
Brent,
to a
real quick.
Yes.
Sorry. regarding that, when you have fire inspections or inspections by the fire marshal, so you don't pay that ahead of time. It's after the fact, meaning do they invoice you based on the amount of time that they spend on the inspection? It's not a flat fee. Is that why they have to do this?
It's a flat fee.
It is a flat fee, but is it, mm-hmm. It's not paid in advance of the inspection request then, or
no.
You request the inspection, you pay the fee. And
so they're not, with the fire marshal fees for inspection, it's mandatory by the state. And so they don't request them. we tell them we're coming, and it actually has, very high rate of not being paid.
Okay. Gotcha. I'm with you. Thank you, April.
So just to clarify, you're talking about those fire marshal inspections when they just show up in an occupied space and look for, like when they come to my office sometimes and they look for fire extinguishers and
correct. That's
daisy chained.
Yeah, their periodic inspection, the fire marshal has a whole process in place where they get to, you know, every establishment on a certain frequency to do those inspections. And as April indicated, they are mandated by the state. So. All right. Okay. The next item. April had a request from council to look at some sort of outdoor lighting standards for in the rural area. So April did some research and found a provision from another jurisdiction that we're proposing to add to the development standards in each of the rural and rural center or each of the rural and resource districts. And so the repetition here is because it's being put into each of those sections.
Each of the rural sections?
Yes. And so this would apply to new developments, short plats, subdivisions. That's the intent.
Is it new building?
And this was a request from council.
It would only apply to new developments that are subject to Title 40. It would not be applied. Go ahead, Mike.
Right. I know that there was some discussion. We had a presentation discussion about existing residences and lights, you know, shining from existing houses and onto neighboring properties. Is that more of a code enforcement, or does code enforcement even have anything to hang their hat on with regards to addressing those situations?
No. And I think that what from the discussions with some council, it was at the very least have it in development standards and people will comply. But no, not with existing. And no, we're not sending code enforcement out.
Okay. I don't. And they probably wouldn't have anything to enforce because there is no code preventing you from shining a spotlight on your neighbor's property. Right. Or maybe there's a state requirements similar to sound or something like that maybe we don't know about that could be addressed, but that clarifies things and that makes sense to do it at the time of development so that you don't have to worry about it later on down the road. Thank you.
So does that apply to building permits if it's part of a short plat then, or is this only intended to be like it mentioned street and parking lot lighting?
I think, you know, it's likely that it, at least in some cases, that this standard may be applied through a plat note. And if that was the case, then it could be applied to subsequent building permits. But I don't know that there would be any, you know, beyond the final inspection to ensure that the lighting, exterior lighting fixtures are meeting the standard, there wouldn't likely be any follow-up enforcement.
Yeah, I guess looking at it when it mentions direct source visible from a neighboring property, you know, most buildings you drive by in the rural areas probably are visible, and you know, whether it's just a small porch light, and I don't know if there's a way to get more specific on it or if it's just intended for general guidance.
Intended for general guidance.
Has anybody talked to PUD about what they have in their inventory? Make sure that they don't have a bunch of those decorative lights that kind of shine out instead of straight down to make sure they're not going to get stuck with a bunch of inventory.
We have not.
So this would exclude. So this would basically outlaw the decorative lights that were popular a few years ago, right?
Are you talking about the acorn lighting?
Yeah.
Or something like that within rural, like cluster developments or things like that?
Yep.
Well, I don't know as if PUD would be the ones that would have the inventory of those. I think those would have to be ordered separately from a private source. And that, you know, streetlights aren't required in Clark County. It would be at the developer's behest to go ahead and do something like that in the rural area. So they would need to be aware of the situation. But I imagine that could be addressed through, as Brent mentioned, a plat note. But if they wanted to have something like this for safety and security purposes, you almost can't have that. But it is, you know, I guess they would have to pick the correct light standard that met this code section if they wanted to have lights such as streetlights in a rural residential development, but they wouldn't have that.
Those acorn lights, they always make those with very orangey yellow, it's very low Kelvin light, which probably should be factored into this on the, there's a big difference between, a 5,000 Kelvin light and a 1,500 Kelvin light. So.
Okay, I'm taking some notes.
I have a question around the holiday lighting, only coming from a experience with the HOA rules that said holiday lighting and there was no definition for that. Do we have a is there a definition for holiday lighting? And then the follow-up question would be, is there an intention to have rules around how long the holiday lighting is allowed to remain up?
No and no.
It's fair.
No, we don't have a definition, and no, I don't want to regulate it past the development standards. And you, I think, hit it on the head as far as if it needs to be regulated, it can be regulated through the HOA. But that's not a business I want us in.
Makes sense.
I don't blame you. And even on the HOA front, though, they didn't have a definition for that. And so homeowners were arguing their case accordingly. So, okay.
It looks like this is more of a code section that should there be a dispute, that then code enforcement could get involved and have this as something to hang their hat on, and just to make the developers or homeowners aware that there is a rural light code section that they need to pay attention to. I don't know. It's one of those things that you never know how it's going to play out until it's put into practice. We've done that a lot with other code sections, and so we might as well just, roll with what we've got unless anybody else has anything specific that they want added in.
My only comment on that would be, did you guys look at Ridgefield's standards? These seem vague in the sense that you're saying downward and shielded. We were one of the first subdivisions when Ridgefield put their code in. We worked through Prairie, but I think other of, the private electrical contractors understand what the purpose of this is. But I thought Ridgefield, it's been a while, but I thought Ridgefield actually had some kind of standards so that you had something to shoot for rather than just, or did you do that on purpose, Brent, that, just saying, being very general about what, that directed downward and shielded.
And I think this came from another jurisdiction anyway, Jeff, so it might.
Well, this one's very vague. I mean, directed downward and shielded to minimize potential glare to motorists and offsite, the directed downward and shielded. I guess it cuts both ways. The vagueness cuts both ways.
That's the same requirements that we have in commercial developments and parking lots and stuff like that as well.
Okay, nothing specific in terms of
right.
How far,
it's not so specific that they don't say that there can't be more than a 0.1 foot candle of offsite glare, that it just says there shall be none. You do a photometric plan, you see the zeros on the outside of the property line and all of the other readings on the interior, and that's what those lights are designed to do. And that's they had 90 degree cutoff at the back side of those lights, and that pretty much takes care of it.
Right. Okay. And the photo, I forgot about the photometric plan.
I also just pulled Ridgefield, so I'll take a look.
Yeah, I thought, it cuts both ways. It in terms of, I don't remember how much specificity Ridgefield had, but you know, since we've been doing those, I think the photometric plan has become kind of a standard. So anyway, all right.
Okay, anything else on that?
No, that's enough.
All right. There's three more items. The next one is updates to the forest practice and forest conversion code, which is a special use standard in Title 40. Kevin Tyler and Hunter Decker are here from Public Works. If you have questions about this, if you want to have a little bit of a longer discussion about it, maybe we could go to the other two items and then come back to it. Okay. Sound like there's any questions today? All right. The next item relates to the standards for temporary hardships. The current standards require a hardship to be in a manufactured, removable type structure. There's one exception for life estates. We've run into several cases where landowners are building a new home, replacing an existing home, and have requested to use that existing home for a hardship. And we feel like that makes a lot of sense. Why make somebody tear down a structure just to bring in a mobile structure? And so what we're proposing here is another exception to the removable structure that allows for this specific circumstance. If there's an existing dwelling that's going to be replaced, that it could be used for a temporary hardship, provided there's a covenant that requires it to be decommissioned once the hardship is over.
And we, I know that this is with regards to the mobile structures, but does this also address existing permanent structures on a piece of property where they build a new permanent structure as well?
Right. That's the intent here. If somebody's building a new permanent home and they want to use the existing home for a temporary hardship as opposed to decommissioning it.
And bring in a, I got it.
Right. So we say decommissioning because they don't necessarily have to tear it down. They can convert it to a guest house. They can convert it to storage or some other accessory use. They need to work with our building folks in terms of the amount of effort that's required to do that. But that's the intent.
That was going to be my next question is what teeth does the county have to ensure that that's been done? Usually it's the removal of a range, that there's no ability to have a stove or oven or anything like that. And right. Then I think there's maybe some other things as well.
Yeah, I think they usually have to remove the range and disable the electrical connection for it.
Gotcha.
With a temporary hardship, you're supposed to, it expires every 2 years. You have to renew it if it continues. Yep. So that would be our hook to do the enforcement on this.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. The last item is an issue that's also come up with the middle housing code changes, particularly with the compact development, where I believe there may be some other cases where guest parking off property is required. We've seen a few proposals where that guest parking is being provided as like an angled or head-in parking that is essentially adjacent to and contiguous with the streets. And we've, in some of those cases, we've seen this required sidewalks proposed to essentially go between the parking and the street. So we don't believe that that's safe. So we're proposing to add a provision to the pedestrian circulation standards where it specifies how sidewalks in urban areas are supposed to be constructed, and adding a provision that does not allow that sidewalk to essentially go between that type of parking and the street. So if, you know, if there's a some sort of driveway to access that parking, like it's a parking lot, this wouldn't apply. Obviously, sidewalks cross driveways all the time. But if you know, I mean, the cases we've seen, there have been like five or six adjacent parking spaces, and the sidewalk is essentially running behind the cars when they're parked. So we see a potential conflict there. So that's this is proposing to address that.
And as long as we don't have to maintain a detached sidewalk as it wraps around the parking, because the street standards call out for detached sidewalks in almost all the situations, unless we, I think, get a road mod now and make sure that ADA is compliant. But if we have detached sidewalks, that we can attach it to the curb that surrounds the off-street parking. Does that make sense?
That does. We just need to make sure that curb is not also acting as a wheel stop, and so that the cars aren't actually overhanging that sidewalk if it's not detached.
Okay, so in that case, then could we apply what's listed in the commercial code and have the 3-foot overhang and widen that sidewalk by 3 feet so that we don't have as much asphalt pollution generating impervious surface, and because one way or the other, we're going to have wheel stops 3 feet back. We don't want the wheel stops because it collects trash and they're hard to maintain and they get kicked loose and all kinds of stuff. But I think people would much rather have the curb there, not deal with the curb stops, and just widen that sidewalk by 3 feet. Is that, I mean, I would assume staff would be amenable to that because that's the way it is on site as well.
Yeah, I can work with Naomi on those two things.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So that is it for this round. Pretty limited. So any other questions?
No, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for presenting this.
Yeah, and I'll let Deeb know when I have a work session scheduled.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Brent. All right, next on the agenda is Stormwater Code Manual Update Intro. So, Devin, I'll turn that over to you.
Awesome. Thank you for having me here today, Deeb. I don't think I've met all of you yet. My name is Devin Rostfer. I'm the Clean Water Division Manager in Public Works. I've been in this position since August of last year, so just over a year. And I'm joined here today by somebody that many of you likely have met before, Rod Swanson, who is on our Clean Water Division team. Rod, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi there. Most of you guys know me. I've been working with stormwater stuff for quite a while in Clark County. And at this point in time, the Clean Water Division maintains the stormwater manual. So that's basically what we're doing here.
So we wanted to come here today to give you an overview of our next update to the Clark County Stormwater Code and Manual. We know that this is a document that many of you are very familiar with, have been involved with updates over the last permit cycles, and also that you utilize to implement your work. Under our municipal stormwater permit, we're required to update our stormwater code and manual and have it adopted by June of 2026. In order to achieve that, we have a few interim milestones that we have to meet over the next year. Starting with submittal of our proposed changes to Department of Ecology by June of next year. And we wanted to come here today really just to introduce ourselves and to let you know that we have a professional services contract with OTAC to help facilitate the update of the Stormwater Code and Manual. And we're very thankful to have that capacity and expertise to assist our team. And we're planning to kick off the update internally with Clark County staff next week. And starting in October, we have requested to be on the DEEV agenda to be bringing code and manual topics to DEEV for your input and feedback throughout the process before we ultimately need to be taking this to the Planning Commission for their recommendation for council approval. So I don't really have a lot of other information for you today except to just introduce ourselves and to let you know that our plan is to invite OTAC in October to give you a full update of the scope of work as well as the timeline. And then we've requested, Megan, I'm sorry to hear that you're leaving. I hope you're off to a great place. But we're planning to at least come to future DEEV meetings in November and December and probably have another touch point before we have to submit the proposed changes to ecology next year. I'm happy to take any questions at this time. Or Rod, did I miss anything that you think we need to share today?
I think you covered it pretty well, Devin.
Okay. So our first milestone will be to put together a table of changes. To describe a bit about what those changes are, ecology has mandated changes that we have to integrate into our stormwater code and manual to make sure that it is equivalent and able to get through the equivalency process with ecology. To be equivalent with the Western Washington Stormwater Management Manual. We also have some technical and guidance changes that ecology is recommending that we incorporate that aren't technically considered mandated that we'll be bringing forth. And then Rod has been keeping a large spreadsheet of little things that have come across his desk over the years. For us to discuss and to consider, to consider integrating into the stormwater code and manual. Those would be described as discretionary changes. And we're also interested in hearing from you if you've identified changes that you think are necessary in the manual. And those can range from technical clarifications to Shrivener's changes as well. So I really look forward to working with you all and hearing your thoughts on where our stormwater code and manual could be improved. And as a part of that scope of work, we're also conducting a training needs assessment on the stormwater code and manual to help develop some new fact sheets and training modules to not only serve as resources to the external community who are interpreting and utilizing the manual, but also for Clark County staff. As you're likely aware, we've had lots of staff changes, and we want to make sure that as the manual's changing and evolving, that we're also developing resources for those of us who utilize the manual internally for permitting or inspection or maintenance related reasons. So we have approximately 2 years to take on this project. And again, we're excited to have OTAC and look forward to working with DEEV throughout the process to get your input and leverage your expertise. I'm happy to take any questions if you have them, but really today my goal is just to say hi.
Does anyone have any immediate questions for Devin? No. Okay. Well, thank you, Devin, for being here. Sounds like we'll be seeing a lot of you in the coming months.
Yes, and I look forward to seeing you in October. We'll be bringing OTAC along for a more comprehensive overview of our schedule and the objectives for the code and manual update. So looking forward to more discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on our agenda, we have our work session discussion, which I sent out to all the DEEV members. I guess it was a little while ago now. I know there were a few outstanding items that we started discussing and then we had not followed up on. So I'll go ahead and go first with the condos because I know that fell in my bucket. So at the council's request, they wanted us to look into condominiums for the county as a housing option. And I worked with, spoke with Justin. Jamie was part of that conversation too. brought in the SWCA lobbyist, who he brought in some other partners from throughout the state that had been working on this topic over the last several years. Ultimately, the data that has been brought to our legislature from the, I will call them the, I forget the term for the attorneys that would defend homeowners, condo owners, those, they have an astronomical amount of cases that are contradictory to what the argument would be for why condos are a good idea. So ultimately, the entire region would have to come forward, and the recommendation back to the county council would need to be that the county would need to put some resources behind it and task their lobbyists, arm their lobbyists, put resources in it, because it is a very, very big topic that would require a lot of partners, a lot of jurisdictions to have the same perspective, because ultimately it comes down to the condo codes. So that's the quick, there's a lot of stuff in the weeds. There are some components of the liability that we could look at and fight as an industry, but it would be a very long uphill battle that no one has had any success with to date. So I'll end it there. But Justin, did you have anything else you wanted to add on the topic? Any specifics?
Yeah, sure, Sherry. You referenced a lot of the issues we're dealing with. Really, the law governing condominiums in the state of Washington is Wakiowa. And there's just that construction defect liability within that. I think we came out one of the only things we could do here locally is use a binding site plan. I contacted Brian Snodgrass with the city of Vancouver, and they haven't had any residential project use that binding site plan. So just kind of reiterating what Sherry said, not a whole lot we can do on the local level, and it's going to take a lot of resources at the state level to make those changes to Wakiowa and make condominiums a more viable homeownership product. So thanks.
Justin, I have a question about that. You mentioned binding site plans. RCW 5817, I believe, indicates that binding site plans can only be used for commercial and industrially zoned projects or land divisions where they don't have to follow the platting process. How are they able to use binding site plans for residential use or zoned property?
So I can't give you probably the best answer in the world, Mike, just to be honest with you. Sure. I do believe there was a change in state law that allows binding site plans. Don't quote me on that. But okay. it kind of came out of the meeting that Sherry and I had with, you know, Jamie Housley and others as a possible solution. So
okay, I see it right now. It says all lease spaces for mobile home or RV parks and condominiums. Okay, so that must be new.
Yeah,
I'm glad you brought that up to our attention.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, so there's a lot in there, and so I don't really know, as far as Deeb's concerned, what the next step would be if we. What we would say to council, how we would follow up on this. Through this process, both Justin and I have made a lot of contacts that would be great resources for the county at the state level to help in this conversation. But I don't really know what role Deeb would have at this point.
I'd be interested in hearing what Jamie has to say about this. So if somebody could reach out to him and ask him if anything we could do from a legal standpoint, but it doesn't appear like there's much for us to do. I would think that we've done our due diligence and looked into this option and just report back to council basically what we've talked about today.
Yeah, and I'm happy to follow up with Jamie on that and see if he has any additional thoughts that he wants to share with the group. And then we can just report back to council that we've looked into it. And really, it's a state level conversation that we can help provide resources and contacts for. But it is outside of the scope of DEEB. Okay. Let's see. What other items did we have? Ryan, I think you had a follow-up, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to go back to my work plan here. No?
I think... Andrew and I were going to look at something.
Okay, let me look. I'll reference the work plan here. Okay, the biggest one on our work plan for the year was the county staff comp plan update, working with the staff. So I don't know if there are any components of that that need to be discussed, even if we don't have the information today, but we can make note for next month's agenda. If anyone has anything to weigh on that.
Sherry, I'm sorry, I was distracted. Can you repeat yourself again? Sorry.
Yes, I was saying that the number one thing on our work plan was all around the comp plan. So I don't know where we're at on that, if there's any, components of that we should be following up on or revisiting with staff. And
we usually get updates from staff on that periodically throughout the process and provide comments where appropriate. I don't know as if it's really anything, and I guess our big push is going to be getting the climate action portion of that included in the comp plan, and there's already been workshops and groups working on that as it is. So unless anybody on DEEB had anything specific that they wanted to bring up to the comp plan, it's more of a it's out of my wheelhouse. Mine's more, site-specific development type work, and I imagine the same for everybody else, but I know that Eric and Jamie have always kept their finger on the pulse of that kind of stuff, so but mostly it's been just updates that we've gotten from long-range planning staff as they go through the update. So I guess that's the only thing I would say is to request of staff when they're ready to provide updates to do so.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, Mike. There are a couple of things in here that we had added that were in regards to the comp plan, one being the arterial atlas conversation. Yep. I don't know if there's anything there that we need to. And then also the working with staff on the mineral land supply. So those were some that we kind of threw in there. So I'm not sure if there's any, and also the revisiting of the capital facilities. And I know that I think it was Eric brought up when we met last time, the change for, I'm going to screw this up because I don't speak the lingo, but the change where you, if you see growth outside of your urban boundary, you can basically take chunks of land and incorporate them, even if they, because that's where you're seeing the development. So that was something that Eric had brought up, but I don't know that we had any discussion on it and what that might look like for our area.
Yeah, they're looking at what areas to bring in, and it's mostly site specific right now. But here's one of the challenges was you see a bunch of groupings of some of the site specific, and then there's gaps in between it. So to make that line consistent, we really want to be able to make sure that the people who just asked that are further out, we're not leapfrogging it, and that boundaries kind of just moved around the ones that really should be in the boundary. So parcels that didn't request it are still included in, if it makes sense to include it in. That doesn't mean they'll develop, but at least it's a real line instead of just a bunch of dots. And then also, we do have the climate action piece of it. I know there's at least one, you know, subcommittee, not here, but there's a stakeholders group and maybe even another group that's looking at that. It'd be good to get an update from them when they're ready. That's could have some significant impacts.
Taking notes.
Another thing that's out there, and I don't think they're ready yet, is the multifamily housing code. And that group has kind of just, I think, paused, but I think there should be kicking up or kicking back into gear again soon. And I know we had that rec space and landscape or open like landscape space and rec space that needs to be worked out, I think, through that process.
I'd like to be involved with that part of it specifically. I guess I haven't made myself clear. I would have thought that that would have been a no-brainer, but I don't know who's on it. Ryan, are you part of that group at all or not?
Yeah.
Ryan, the multifamily. Is, I am.
Yep.
Yeah. So when you guys get to who is that?
Dan.
Oh, Dan, great. So when you guys get to that specific part of it, not maybe you have, maybe you haven't, I'd love to be pulled in just to provide additional. I mean, you all know what we're talking about here. Ryan, you probably know it just as well as I do from a practice standpoint. But maybe give us a quick update as to where you guys really are.
We haven't met for a couple months, I would say. I don't feel like we've gotten very far on that one.
Okay. On the whole thing, the whole multifamily housing.
Yeah, the whole thing. Okay. Yeah.
Who's leading that charge?
It's the same, some private group that I don't remember their name. They're somebody that the county hired to facilitate that.
Okay.
That JET planning, Elizabeth Decker is leading it.
That's right. All right. Well, once you guys get kicked back off again, let us know, or at least let me know. And so I don't want to be actively involved in the whole part of it, but definitely that aspect of it. It's going to, I can hopefully provide some real life experience as far as that's concerned. And just to let you know, on that, we are, you know, proceeding with multifamily housing projects. We're able to meet the code as it's currently written. But here's the thing. We're having to remove housing types. For instance, on the last few projects that we're submitting, we have to remove all 3-bedroom units. We have to make the building smaller, so we're actually have more 1-bedroom units. So it kind of runs contrary to comp plan goals and policies of providing a wide variety of housing types. Every single project that we have, we've removed, the ones that I'm working on presently, we've removed all 3-bedroom units. We just can't make it work with the size of the units. The additional area required for the private rec space. So that's kind of an end result of the way the code is currently written. We're only doing 1- and 2-bedroom apartment buildings or units, and not even thinking about 3 bedrooms anymore.
And I will second that, Mike. I've got one in front that we stripped out all the 3 bedrooms. We were actually trying to look at trying to put some studios in because we found that the studios, since rent's so high, the studios will rent up fairly well. And we stripped those out because, you know, we just ended up having, we would end up having too many units, and then the recreation area would get too big. So cut back on the number of units.
Looks like Terry has his hand up.
Yeah, do you have something to add?
Yeah, I just was going to say that there was a national reporting that came out that there is a three bedroom units are, as a whole across the nation, there's an excess of three bedroom units. And with that, there's been rents have been impacted directly for those types of units. So it sounds like what you're experiencing and seeing is also, it's reflective of national statistics. So it supports, it strongly supports that position is all I wanted to add.
Well, our clients have wanted to add three bedroom units in our projects. They want that mix and they don't get it. So what you're saying, Terry, is that there's, say what you said again. I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I understand what you're saying and it's different, but nationally there is an excess of three bedroom units.
Oh, excess of, okay.
Excess of. So if you want to look at excess inventory, there is an excess inventory of three bedroom units, and that's what has the highest vacancy rate for larger, larger apartment units. I know specifically there was a project on 179th Street. They had additional phases. They focused on larger apartment units, and that project, you know, it did, unfortunately, absorption rate didn't go as well. And so they weren't going to be building out those future phases as one example.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. And I can pass that along to my client too.
I have a question regarding multifamily. And maybe you guys haven't gotten to this yet. Is the county considering the, I'm going to call it the apartment model, because I don't know what they're technically called, where you have a bedroom, individual bedroom space, living space, or sorry, bedroom and bathroom, but then you have a shared living space. It's almost like a dorm model, if you will, but you see them a lot in bigger cities. Like there's a bunch of them up in the Seattle area. I think Portland was starting to consider these. Is that a housing type that
micro there would be?
Thank you. I'm like, they're called something, but
what was that?
So they have a shared micro unit. Yeah. So it's basically
micro unit. Okay.
Yeah, they're kind of like a dorm.
I've heard of it. Yep.
Yeah, they're really popular for people who are just starting out on their own, need a first place. But they're also really popular for like business travel, people who need just a temp, like they're in town for 3 months for work, those types of things, and they just need a place to crash.
None of my clients are even considering anything like that, and they try to think outside the box. On some of these things and you know, follow the market trends. But that, I think, for more suburban Clark County, I'm not going to say that they wouldn't work here, because I'm just a designer. I don't know. Ryan, have you seen anything like that? Or Seth, have you seen anything like that come across your guys's?
Not that we've actually built. We've talked about it, and I've had clients talked about it. We've done preliminary designs on it, but it's never actually gone into production.
Okay. I'm one of those clients that Ryan's speaking about, and I'd say the issue is as financing is constrained, there's less of a willingness to try new things, and it really is more so by appraisers, by lenders, whoever those groups are, investors for proven out models, which has pulled back on looking at different things like micro units. So not say that there isn't a demand for those, or like condos would be supported and there would be a demand on those, but then you have condo law, and then you also have the factors, not comparables, that you use to support financing, which means you're going to have to see a slow, if there is demand behind that, which I agree, I think there is, you're going to see those provided slowly in the market, because it's going to have to somewhat organically grow, because lending and appraisals that backs that will not support huge swings without market data that says that, hey, that's a successful investment that's going to work out.
And that's totally fair. If there's any value to anyone on this call that is considering that, in talking with a bank that is wanting to kind of help fight some of these battles with condos, the lending struggles. I recently connected, their market is primarily in California, but their territory is the whole West Coast. And he's been kind of fighting some of the lending laws and appraisal issues that Terry just mentioned. And he would be open to a conversation in our region if there's any ways that we can kind of think outside the box as far as financing these types of projects, if that is a direction that we wanted to go. So happy to follow up with anyone on that if that's of interest. Okay, sorry, I derailed us a little bit with that question.
Sherry, I know one thing that is in our purview is to kind of review staffing levels. And I'm curious, I think there's been some attrition at the county in some of the departments. I'd like to request of staff for the next meeting, maybe a quick update from April as far as planning staff, development engineering staff, building inspection, things like that. How staffing levels are right now, and whether they're able to meet current timelines and such, and what if there is a deficiency in staffing, how the recruitment process is going. So I'd like to have that on for our next agenda and item.
I agree, Mike. I don't know like how deep in the weeds this group gets in supporting April and this type of a thing, but I would also be curious if there's anything that we as a group can do to help support so that the attrition is not there. I don't know what that looks like, but. Yeah,
it's more what we've done in the past is that they've come in and they've given us, you know, kind of an update as far as how staffing is. And oftentimes it means shifting staff. It looks like they're moving people up, for instance, in planning, moving people up through the ranks. Are they backfilling those positions that are vacated? Are they able to keep people around in order to bring them up through the ranks? My experience, at least with planning staff, has been that, you know, I start getting a relationship with someone at the permit center level, and then there's the fully complete level and, you know, final site plan level, and then they become a planner. And it's great to see those people stick around.
I think, Mike, that's where my question's coming from, is if there is something specific at the county that is making retention a challenge, if it's salary, hours worked, if there's something that we can do to put right, that's where I'm going. Like, is there something we can do to encourage the council to evaluate how we pay them or how we what the benefits look like? That's kind of what I'm getting at, but I also don't know if that's within Deeb's purview, but if that is an issue with the staff at the county, I think it's important that we fix that because it is causing issues with development timelines. April?
I can give an update now and then I can do it next time too. So, okay. So you described it pretty well. So thank you. For most positions, we have been able to, hire within, growing from within. So you go and come into the permit center and you can become a building inspector or a planner or a plan reviewer. And so we've done pretty well there. And I would say we have had some retirements in building inspections, but we have been filling those internally. And we don't have any open positions right now. I think he just hired a building inspector. Permit center is also pretty good. It's right now and planners, I haven't had turnover in planners, I think in over 7 months, I want to even say longer. So planning staff is full. They're busy. We've had a lot of things come off hold, but we don't have We've had the same staff there for over 7 months, which is really exciting because that was a really hard one to fill. And then we have development engineering. I'm short engineers. So we've had it posted for a very long time. Applicants are hard to find. We've spent some extra money and went on a couple more platforms to try to get an engineer three or an engineer two. And it's slow going. The spending a little more money for recruitment has helped. I think I might have gotten three applications, and Naomi is working on that now. I don't know if you know, but the county went through a survey, or they went through Baker Tilly, and Baker Tilly just analyzed every job within the county. And so the employees, and it was extensive, and from what I know, they've used good data as far as a good mix between Spokane County, but also Portland, because we're so close. And so it wasn't just narrowed in, you know, there was a good, oh my gosh, I don't know why I can't think of this word, but there was a good base of where they were pulling their information from. It wasn't just Spokane County, which has a very different cost of living than we do. And so that happened. And I think it's almost been a year. Most of those increases have almost been a year. So that was already done. And yes, I had a lot of staff who were not getting paid what they needed to be. And that was rectified. So it's not, I mean, we're never going to make, I think my problem with engineers is that they're not going to make what they can privately. So it has to be. And even the private sector is having problems with engineers from what I hear. So it's just, you know, you'll have to want to maybe learn here from this work and then go private, which I think has happened, and or love our work schedule. Because that's all I can give you, and you can work right from home 90% of the time, so I'm doing whatever we can. But yes, I'm short engineers right now, but I do have some candidates. I know that we also did job offer a couple of candidates and were refused, so not for
thanks
a lack
for the
of
update,
trying.
April.
Yeah,
thank you for the
that's
update.
That's great. Thank you, April. Well, I remove my request to have this on next month's agenda then.
Already kind of answered, huh?
Yeah, right.
If we're done with that topic and moving on, we did get that letter or email from Clark County's Citizens United. And was it our plan to respond to that letter or let them know what we were working on? I think I forwarded it to you guys.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to pull it up right now so I can remember the specifics in it. Did you share that with everybody?
I think I might. I did send it to everybody. Yes. Yep. I just saw that I did. I BCC'd everybody, but because it was copied back to them. So when I sent that, I copied you and Seth, and then blind copied the rest of the group.
Yeah, I got it.
I think one of them was maybe talking about Jamie and they were complaining. So I didn't want to like let them know that I sent it on to Jamie. I also sent it to staff too. So, but I mean, it was addressed to Deeb and they just sent it to me. But it was on Deeb's work plan and what we're doing to address the work session requests from staff. Mm-hmm. And kind of just complaining that things are getting worse, and then you know nothing's being done about rural housing. So
Eric, I just sent it to Shannon. I want her to put it up for everyone to look at.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, I think that when I read this, it there's a lot of stuff that isn't in our purview. Number one, it's at a state level. White Oaks in particular, that we as the people that are on the front lines of reviewing the code, applying the code, working with staff on adjusting the code, being on stakeholder groups for code amendments, creation, things like that. I think that DEEB is doing, the members of DEEB and the extended development community, meaning those people that also participate in stakeholder groups, are doing whatever they can to work with staff to make things as smooth as possible. We're not going to get rid of code. Code is created for a number of different reasons. One, for the health, safety, and welfare of the general public. Code being unnecessary, I'm not shy to say when something is unnecessary or that doesn't make sense, and then we'll have a discussion about it. But not going on beyond state requirements. The state does not have a zoning code. It requires jurisdictions, well, it doesn't require, it allows jurisdictions to have zoning codes, but it mandates through GMA that they have a comprehensive plan that is put into effect through the zoning code. And so there isn't anything in the state that we would be going beyond because the state doesn't have, say, parking requirements for retail development. And I think it's an opinion. It's my opinion that it's an opinion that the codes are getting worse. We could do away with codes and have unfettered development, and people will go back to, you know, developments of what they look like back in the 60s and 70s. I don't think that that's what anybody wants. So I think it's an opinion where they say the codes are getting worse. There's certain limitations that are required that we work within. The codes have been created over a period of time and respond to the development, what kind of development is happening at that time. We're always looking for improvements and efficiencies. And I think that as part of this group, and even before I was part of this group, being part of stakeholder committees, that's what staff would like too in these different jurisdictions. So I'm not, and we also look at, you know, fast tracking development. We're working with staff right now to work on a, you know, like a pseudo 90 day streamline review, very similar to the city of Vancouver's. So I'm a little challenged with telling staff that they're being unreasonable and that we need to push back and to refuse their demands. The code is the code. There's also a process for code to be created. And any particular group can be a part of that process by attending planning commissions, hearings, and council hearings, and even, you know, attend DEEB work, our meetings where we see new code changes come along so that they can get a, you know, kind of what's happening instead of just responding to what's already taken place. I've spoken enough. I'll let somebody talk.
Yeah, if I may jump in, I think to sum it up from my perspective, I mean, one, they don't give anything really specific that's tangible that we could say, like, here's where we stand or here's where we see an improvement. But I think it's where how Mike started. The we're an advisory board. We are not a decision board. We can advise staff, but ultimately it is in, you know, April's court. It's in her team, right? Like, it's Kathleen Otto. They ultimately have the final decision. So I do feel a little bit, Mike, like you, that this letter is maybe addressed to the wrong group. If they would like DEEB to have a little more decision power, if you will, that is not something that we can do. So that's just kind of a high level. I think that there's some underlying things that they're hinting at in there that are a frustration of the industry and of people, but they're they didn't give us anything specific and tangible. And I would echo, Mike, what you said. There hasn't been a single code that we haven't looked at that someone hasn't asked, is this, you know, beyond what the state requires? That question comes up every time. So,
yeah. I think it does warrant a response, and I think maybe we should get back to them and kind of just go over, you just summarize what our discussion's been, but also maybe send them a copy of our work plan, because a lot of the stuff that they're mentioning is in our work plan, and we are actively working on, I mean, trying to make things, you know, quicker, easier, and try to get rid of some redundancies or things that are excessive. And we do, we discuss those things regularly. So, you know, we do it in a constructive way with staff's help. Sometimes it's just helpful to understand their perspective and why the codes are, or why it is there to begin with. And sometimes we may not see that. So, you know, I think we're addressing a lot of it. I think it does maybe warrant a quick response, and maybe also ask them if they have any specific concerns. Please let us know if there's a code section in particular that they would like us to take a look at. You know, we'd be happy to do that. And I think the question at the end about the rural housing, needing more rural housing, I think that may be a little out of context, because I think that the question was about the comp plan, and there was testimony at the comp plan, and the urban growth boundary and that process does not specifically target rural areas. That's been said before by staff, and I think what Jamie was saying was repeating what that was, and we're talking about urban growth boundaries, not moving rural boundaries. But that's a separate policy, I think, of, you know, what we can do in the rural area, you know, rezoning some of the areas that was attempted a few years ago as part of the comp plan, and I think it got shot down for some reason. It got appealed and taken out. But anyway, I think there probably is something we could respond to and maybe give them a copy of our work plan.
Yeah, because the other piece that is, like, they're referencing the 2021 work plan, Medvedchuk Waring Environment, and that's not who we're working, like, that's not our current council and the current work plan that our count, right? Like, they're, and I guess that I understand their point that they're saying these things were in 2021 and they still haven't been addressed, but
I might suggest that we provide them the portion of our work plans over the last, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years of the accomplishments, to show them that we're just not meeting to see our pretty faces, but to also get things accomplished. There's a lot of us that spent a lot of time on our own dime working on stakeholder groups, you know, passing along our expertise in the field as part of a, and I'm going to lose my AirPods. So if you can't hear me, let me know. As part of trying to make things better. So Eric, is that something you want to do, or do you have time, or I could start something as far as a response is concerned and just pass it back and forth.
Sure. Yeah. If you can do it, that'd be great. I can contribute as well. So maybe start okay. a draft.
I think Terry has something to add before we get too far.
Yeah, I guess sure. I just say that. I mean, to me, this seems like something that would be directed to council, and then if council wants to, you know, we're, you know, if council asks us to look at something, consider something, and then provide feedback, we can do that. And I guess that's where I would kind of start and stop with it is there are certain items that we review that staff brings to us. And if there's anything specific that council brings to us, then obviously we'd review that as well. And if there's something, if there's items that they want to raise concern at with council that council then wants to hand down to us to give us the, you know, responsibility to look at or to staff, then that would be to me, it would be council down. And that would be the appropriate way to go about that. I think adding in council, in addition to kind of what you talked about, would be where I would, I guess, suggest they start with their communication.
Yeah, I feel a little bit we had, if someone has a complaint about staff, like, we're not trying to get in that.
No.
Right. So I feel about this letter a little bit the same as I do if it was a specific plan that someone was frustrated with. Anyone else that hasn't said anything have anything to add?
Has anybody watched that YouTube video that they sent? I haven't. I was just wondering if it's what it is and
what is. I don't.
Yeah,
there's a YouTube video that Clark. Well, I guess
we're all
going to
watch
right
it after this
meeting.
Call. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I just would say we have limited. We don't really have. We don't have authority, right? We're advisory. So if they want to see something different, that's something that they should go to council with. And I think giving some examples as far as what we have accomplished and what we've done is good, but I think also maybe helping you know, with an understanding of, you know, we're just an advisory board and we don't get to run rogue. So
I think that brevity will be the best for this response.
I totally agree.
Everyone's familiar with Clark County Citizens United, right? And Carol Lebanon. And I'm not even sure it merits a response because it probably does, but I would agree that brevity is, a better way
from a professional standpoint, Jeff. I think it does. I think if anybody were to reach out to us directly, that regardless of whether we agree with what they say or not, if somebody were to say, "Hey, Deeb, you guys have been doing great. Thank you very much," we would respond. Thank you. We appreciate that.
I'm just saying brevity. I was agreeing with brevity. I mean, I'm just saying from a personal standpoint, given my history with them and the shots they take sometimes, and they do, you know. But from a professional standpoint, I just say brevity. I'm agreeing with this, just being brief on it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it could open Pandora's box and Mike, or the council. You know.
And Mike, I'm happy to draft something because like Eric. They're not even aware that Eric sent this to everybody, right? So I'm happy to draft something and get it circled that's really short and sweet and then send an email.
Okay.
And then send it off.
Sure.
After everyone signs off on it.
Well, yeah. I think because it was a Deeb issue, I mean, it's kind of expected that I would send it on to the group. The other thing, too, is I'm sure that, you know, whatever we say here, too, they'll probably watch the recap of this. So it is important to respond to it. And we share, right in our work plan, we share a lot of their same concerns. That's why these items are in our work plan. So, and they're mostly the rural housing and rural rights group. So, you know, we don't cover that a ton, but it is something that is still part of the county purview and, you know, definitely warrants a response.
Well, and I know that one of my neighbors here, I don't know that they're part of this group, but they've been very vocal with me that I think that the comp plan piece that we talked about, where you can, depending on where your development's going, you can move your boundary, right? You can take these pockets, whatever that thing is. There's some concerns about that out in the rural area. Heads up.
Well, Sherry,
for rural housing.
Then if you want to take this on, that'd be great. Let's if you want to start something, I don't know as if it needs to necessarily go to the entire group, but maybe just you and I and Eric. We'll keep Jeff out of it, clearly.
Thanks, Mike.
I'll send it to the group to weigh in. I'll keep it short and sweet. Just a summary of, you know, here's some things that we have done. Here's what our work plan looks like. And ultimately, we're an advisory board, and we don't have the decision ability, right? The buck stops with the staff. And so
and council.
Yep. And so if they want more action, then they should take it to council to review further.
Yep.
And then also, if they have suggestions of specific code things that we could look at, we are an advisory board to council, and we could pass it along with our recommendation if there's something specific they want to bring to us. So I would say that's the request is also, if you have anything specific, we'll be happy to look at it.
Yep, I'll take a stab at it and get it out to the group for you guys to look at.
Cool.
I think that was the last thing that I also had. For today.
Yep.
Were there any things for next month's agenda specific? So we talked about finding out from staff if they were ready to give an update on the climate component, because I think they just did their last meeting, if I remember correctly, but that may not have been enough time to get everything together before October. I'll look through my emails, Ryan. I think there was something that to follow up with. I want to say it had to do with some of the process things that April was working on, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think that's right. I think it was just permit processing stuff. Yeah, a lot of that's ongoing.
And maybe get an update on how those projects are going through the streamlined process from April. That'd be good to have.
It would be good to hear about that. I agree.
Yeah. And then the last minutes of our discussion in June really focused around the road mods and the road mod committee. I think that's maybe still something. I mean, there's a lot of discussion there. I'm not the road mod guy, even though I've written a lot of them. So I don't know how things are going with that now. It's only been a few months, so but that's certainly on our work plan as well. Okay. So but let's definitely plan on meeting and continue to discuss some of this stuff, and maybe in the meantime let staff know to give some updates as far as those things are concerned.
I agree.
Okay.
Maybe we should have a road mod guy on Deeb.
Well, we've ran right up to 4 o'clock, and our meeting technically ends at 4. But did anyone else have anything else, any like new items that they want us to add? Like I know Houston or Justin, did you have anything that you wanted us to be looking at?
Yeah. Any public comment?
Yeah, public comment.
I don't have anything today.
Okay. Well, on that note, we will adjourn. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next month.
Good. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Cheers.